since I last joined you on Ball About the South with C. Wood. The Auburn Tigers basketball team is now called the number one ranked Auburn Tigers basketball team. Meanwhile, on the other side of the state, the Alabama Crimson Tide, the struggles continue to be very real as they lose again. However, all of the news in Tuscaloosa was not bad news, as Alabama did steal one of Georgia's big dogs in college football. And dog fans are not very happy about it, to say the absolute least. And then there's the NFL. Two new black GM hires this past week. We have a hire of a former Alabama offensive coordinator that took place. And then there was one of the best, most action-packed, most exciting weekends of NFL playoff football we've ever witnessed. In that weekend, Tom Brady could be retiring. Aaron Rodgers could be leaving Green Bay. And unfortunately, Tennessee Titans fans found out that they cannot spell the word Tannehill without the letters I-N-T. All of that and more on this, the next episode of Ball About the South with C. Wood. What's good? What's good? It's C. Wood coming right back at you with another edition of Ball About the South with me, C. Wood. Kerry Wood, that's my full name, but just call me C. Wood for short. At C. Wood on sports on Twitter and IG is where you can find me. And this is Ball About the South. Ball About the South, it is that podcast where we talk real sports and we do it with real Southern flavor. I'm just happy to have you back in. But it's the newest episode of my Ball About the South podcast. And a lot to talk about today. Again, whatever platform you're listening to me on, I would really appreciate it if you would subscribe to that podcast. Subscribe on that, whether it's Spotify, Apple, whatever platform you're listening on. I would really love you to subscribe. That way you'll know when I'm dropping a new episode, because there are times that I have dropped a couple episodes in a week. Not many weeks since I've started this podcast, but there are some times that I put out a bonus episode or whatever. And I think we're going to have a few of those coming up as we get closer to March Madness. College basketball starting to heat up. I think there's going to be a couple bonus episodes involved in that. And so, make sure you subscribe, like, comment, do all those good things. And if you think I deserve a 5-star rating up on Apple, and I'm hearing that you can do the 5-star rating or the rating anyway on Spotify now. I did not know that until a couple days ago. So please, if you feel inclined to do so, I would definitely appreciate it. Anyway, man, let's get into what was a really interesting week of sports here. A lot of it involving teams right here in the South, in my neck of the woods. I'm from Birmingham, Alabama, if you do not know, right here in the heart of SEC country. So we talk a lot of SEC sports here. Obviously, we talk about all the AFC South, NFC South teams. We talk a little NBA. We're going to talk, we'll throw a little bit of Major League Baseball in there as well. And a lot going on as we move forward here, getting close to February, man. We saw 2020 and 2021 be basically a blur, and 2022 is starting to set up the same way. I mean, it is just flying past us, and just crazy. Anyway, man, let's get into these sports. Obviously, a lot of topics to talk about. I'm going to give you a little bit of a synopsis of what we're going to talk about on the show here. Obviously, I talked, you know, on the intro there, I talked about the Auburn Tigers. They are the number one ranked team in the land right now, college basketball. They had a scare the other night after getting that number one ranking against Missouri, but they were able to pull that game out. We'll talk a little bit more about them a little bit later in the show as they get ready and other SEC teams get ready for the SEC Big 12 Challenge that goes down on tomorrow. I am recording on Friday evening. Big SEC Big 12 Challenge has become really a big thing, man, if you're a college basketball fan. You got a lot of huge matchups. We'll go over all of those matchups a little bit later in the show. They take place all day long on the ESPN family of networks. I look forward to that all every year here the last several years. There's a lot of good matchups that you're going to enjoy tomorrow, I'm pretty sure. So we got college basketball to talk about. One thing I do want to implement into the show as we get close to March Madness, I want to talk about a team, you know, maybe some of the mid-major teams, some of the lesser profile teams here in the South that I think really have a good chance of making some noise in March. Maybe having a chance to get an at-large bid into the tournament, maybe they have a chance to win their conference tournament or whatever the case may be. And I want to highlight a few of those teams. Today's highlight, I might as well just keep it close to home. We're going to highlight the UAB Blazers. The Blazers are really a really good basketball team, man. Obviously, I've been a huge fan of them living here in Birmingham just about as long as I can remember. And we're going to get into them. We're going to take that approach to several teams if we get close to March Madness, man. There are several good teams in Conference USA that I don't think get the they don't get the recognition that they deserve. I think those are teams that can definitely do some damage to a bracket in March. There are some teams, obviously, here in the South, the teams like Belmont and Murray State that have calls we have wreaked havoc. Georgia State, teams like that that have wreaked havoc on brackets in March, man. So we're going to talk about some of those teams, and as we get closer to March Madness, I'm going to try to help you out with your bracket, man. If you like to fill out a bracket in March, I'm going to give you a few teams from down here in my neck of the woods that can cause some problems once we get to March Madness. I'm going to give you a few of those here in the next few weeks here on the show. So we look forward to that. Obviously, you heard in the intro, we have a couple new black GMs, which is really a good thing. We're going to talk about that pretty briefly. Really happy to see that. And then we have Brian Daboll, who is the new New York Giants head coach. Of course, he was the former Alabama Crimson Tide offensive coordinator. He was Buffalo's offensive coordinator until a few days ago after they got beat in that incredible Sunday night game that we witnessed in the AFC divisional round against Kansas City. So Brian Daboll moves on. He moves up in his career to be the head coach of the New York Giants. That'll be an interesting marriage, to say the least. We'll see how that goes in New York as he, you know, Daniel Jones, the quarterback there, and Saquon Barkley and Ingram, the tight end there from Ole Miss, and all of those dudes, man. And we'll see how they can pull things together in the Meadowlands up there for the New York Giants. So that's going to be an interesting hire. And then, of course, we have to talk NFL, man. Like I said, huge weekend that we just saw. We got a huge Sunday of football coming up. We're going to talk about that. But, you know, we're going to get into what we saw last weekend. We're going to do that here in my next segment. And we're going to, you know, I think it's just, you sit there and you think about it. The good thing about it is we were able to witness what we saw last weekend. The bad part about it is you pretty much know there's no way we're going to get that good Well, let me put it like this, because I think there was a lot of bad football last weekend, okay? I mean, we had defensive breakdowns galore, and we had turnovers. You know, a lot of that was not playoff football to a degree, okay? Let's just be real about it. But as far as excitement, as far as the drama, as far as how everything played out, as far as the storylines, when you talk about Aaron Rodgers, the situation there, you talk about Tom Brady, all of that, man, Derrick Henry coming back, all of those things wrapped into one, it was this incredible weekend. But you know it's going to be almost impossible for the games on Sunday to come close to that, or possibly maybe even the Super Bowl to come close to that. I mean, again, maybe I'm wrong about that, but man, I mean, it was just an incredible weekend, especially Sunday. It's absolutely incredible. I mean, I was just in shock. I mean, jaw dropped to the floor looking at the end of that Rams-Tampa Bay game and looking at the end of the Kansas City-Buffalo game. Insane stuff. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to get right back into that NFL when Ball About the South continues. Okay, we're back. Ball About the South, this is the new episode. It continues on. And, man, I don't want to put a damper on anything. I really don't. It's exciting. Like I said, I just basically talked about how exciting weekend we had last week there with the NFL divisional round, playoffs and everything. But man, you have to go back and kind of look at some of this stuff that we saw. I mean, we saw some really bad execution in every one of those games. Every one of them. Which, you know, again, it's playoff football. And I understand. Look, I understand where the offenses are right now, because I speak on it a lot. Because I spoke on it a lot this past season concerning Alabama's defense, the Alabama Crimson Tide. You know, Alabama was really, this is a subpar season for Alabama defensively. But my thing was, I think that, you know, you're seeing players having to do, they have so much going on when you're talking about them getting ready for just one play. They have to figure out, you know, where they're supposed to be aligned. Okay, where am I going to be aligned? Okay, especially if you're talking about if you're a linebacker or you're a safety. In my opinion, those are the two most volatile positions on the field. And, you know, you're talking about teams spreading you out and everything now, tight ends being split out wide or then sliding. Then, you know, teams going with empty backfields and, you know, all these things. And then, of course, you've got to worry about, especially in the case of a guy like Mahomes, RPOs. And, you know, is he going to keep? And, you know, if he gets out of the pocket, where do I need to be? All those things, man, have to enter your head if you're a middle linebacker, outside linebacker, safety or whatever, getting ready for a play. And that's a lot to process. So when I look at some of the plays that we saw in the NFL, man, this past weekend, it kind of brought me back to that. It kind of brought me back to what we saw with Alabama. I was like, man, that's what I'm saying. This is the same thing. We're seeing professionals. I saw so many Alabama fans getting down on Alabama's youngsters, 18, 19, 20-year-old youngsters. I'm sitting there, look, I'm telling y'all, we're seeing the same mistakes in the pros on Sundays. I mean, you don't need to get down on these players like that. I mean, we're seeing these guys in the pros that are getting paid make the same mistakes. And we saw it a lot this past weekend. And I don't think, you sit down, you look at the end of the Tampa Bay game. Tampa Bay, first of all, Tampa Bay should never have been in that football game. Never should have been in that football game. I mean, the Rams did everything they could to say, look, here's the game. We don't want to host no NFC Championship game in our stadium next week. We don't want to become the first team that hosts the NFC Championship game and then basically possibly host the Super Bowl in two weeks after that. We don't want any of that. We don't want to go to the Super Bowl. We don't want to go to the NFC Championship game. Here you go. 27-3, the Rams do everything basically to throw that football game away. Turnovers, we saw Cam Akers fumble the ball right there before the half. It should have been 27-3 or at least 23-3 at the half. Cam Akers fumbles the ball on the 2-yard line and installs that drive out. Then, of course, he fumbled again later on, and then there was the Cooper Kupp fumble. Cam Akers fumble in the fourth quarter was just, oh my goodness! This is what I'm talking about. This is just fundamental football. When you're in a situation like that, and the Rams are trying to close this game out, and if I'm not mistaken, the Buccaneers were out of timeouts. They were out of timeouts. All the Rams really need to do is get a first down, but the main thing they need to do is just hold on to the ball. Even if you have to punt, it's not going to be a whole lot of time for Brady to get them back down the field and score a touchdown because a field goal would not have done them any good. Cam Akers goes in through the line, goes in through the traffic, one hand around, run arm around the football, and you know, those defenders for Tampa Bay are going to be trying to punch that ball out. You have to sit there and you have to grab on that ball with two arms, two hands. And once you hit that crowd of defenders, he didn't do it. He fumbled the ball. Tampa Bay tied up the game. Okay, so, you know, to get back to my defensive breakdowns, like I was saying. So the game's tied up at 27. And this second, you know, they had gotten the first down with Cooper Kupp there. Kupp caught the ball on the sideline and was able to get out of bounds. Okay, next down, very next play, if I'm not mistaken, Tampa Bay decides to come with the blitz. They kind of go a cover zero, which, you know, I didn't really understand that. And the safety is basically in bad technique or whatever. He should have been on the inside of Cooper Kupp. There's no help there, and you know he had no help either way it was. So, and Matt Stafford saw that, and he just threw the ball up and threw it and let Cooper Kupp run under it, and he gets the huge first down, huge play against the Rams in field goal range. They come up. Run up, they spike the ball, get the field goal team on the field, kick the field goal, and win the game. But there's just no way you can give up that kind of play, man, in that situation. It's just no way you can get that play up like that. I did not understand the call by Tampa Bay's, you know, defense on that play. I just didn't get it. So, you know, the turnovers by the Rams trying to give them the game. Tampa Bay capitalizes on those turnovers, ties the game up, only to have one of the biggest defensive breakdowns we saw this past weekend in a weekend full of defensive breakdowns. And the Rams take the game back. And now they get the chance to host the NFC Championship game and possibly the Super Bowl as well, which is just crazy to think about. After just a year after we saw the home team basically play the Super Bowl, being Tampa Bay playing that game in Tampa like they did last season. That was the first time that had ever happened. So we're possibly going to see it again here this season. So that, you know, really interesting. And then you move on to the Sunday night game. The defensive breakdowns were mesmerizing. Okay? I mean, you sit here and look at after Buffalo takes the lead, 13 seconds to go in the game. 13 seconds. I think you just zone it up. In my opinion, I think you know, obviously it'd be good if you got Rush on Patrick Mahomes in that spot or whatever. I guess, but it's only 13 seconds. Man, I'm just gonna try and make sure I keep everything in front. And yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. And the thing is, Travis Kelce called it. He's like, look, if Buffalo is in this set, this is what we're going to do. And Patrick Mahomes hit it. I mean, he hit the first one to Tyreek Hill, and then, of course, he hit the one to Kelce that got them in field goal range. Two plays in a situation like that to get them, I think, was it, what, 45 yards? This is not good football, man. As exciting as it was, don't get me wrong, as exciting as it was, and we're talking about one of the quarterback duels for the ages. I mean, there have been a lot of quarterback duels that I've seen over the years, and I really can't think of one that was any better, because when you sit there and look at Josh Allen, the way he, you know, man, this dude carved Kansas City's defense up, and then you sit there and go, Patrick Mahomes comes back and he does the same thing to Buffalo's defense, and Buffalo's defense was number one in the NFL. Now, I'm not really sure how they got that, to be honest with you. Then again, you know what? I do kind of have a theory on how they got it, now that I think about it. Because that Buffalo defense is not, they are not the best in the NFL. Statistically, yes. But you sit there and you look at the players themselves, how they play, no, they're not the best in the NFL. They're not. And they proved that this past Sunday. I think what got them that ranking was the fact that they're playing the Patriots twice a year. They played, you know, they played the Patriots twice. They played the Jets twice. And even Miami, to a degree, really was not that good offensively either. So you got six games right there where you're playing some pretty anemic offenses, in my opinion. I think that's a big part of why they were the number one ranked defense, because that was not the number one ranked defense. They're just not. Anyway, you know, so you sit there and you kind of look at that game like that, man. There's just no way you can sit there and give up 45 yards in two plays when you know the situation. You know what Kansas City has to do to be able to set themselves up to get the game time field goal. You just can't play it like that. You just can't. And I'm not a a defensive guru. I'm not a guy that can sit here and study film and tell you what defensive guy the teams need to be in and things of that nature. But I know the way they did it Sunday night was not the way you're supposed to do it. It shouldn't have been that easy. There's no way. So that was really huge, man. The turnovers by the Rams, the defensive breakdown for the Buccaneers and the Bills especially, because there were breakdowns defensively for the Chiefs as well. I mean, you know, they had some pretty big breakdowns as well. Again, as good as Josh Allen was, he had some pretty easy throws. When you sit there and really look at it, some of those throws were pretty easy for him to make. There was little to no resistance on a lot of those throws from anybody wearing a red jersey. So, you know, there's that. You know, it's just one of those things. But again, fantastic football. Don't get me wrong. Really exciting. I'm just saying, wasn't necessarily the most fundamental football we've ever seen. And then you look at, obviously, on that Saturday night, man, I don't know what to say about that one. You sit there, you give up the punt return. Well, I'm sorry, you get the block punt that San Francisco scoops up, and they get to the end zone. They score off of that. That's their touchdown. That's the only touchdown the 49ers have. And then you look up, Green Bay gets the football back. Around 4 minutes to go in the fourth quarter and everything. Basically, you know, you get to that third down play. And again, this gets back to Aaron Rodgers, man. You know, talking about Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers, they're faltering in, you know, these huge spots, man. Especially the last couple of years where they've had home games, they've had home field throughout the NFC playoffs, and they have failed each time. And there was no bigger way to, for, you know, no better way for this to illustrate just how frustrating it is, especially if you're a Packers fan, to see that third down play. Okay, you know, you get the drop back by Aaron Rodgers, and he throws, he's looking obviously for no one else but Davante Adams on that post route. I think it was a post route down the middle of the field. There's safety help over the top. So you're talking about basically double coverage. The ball gets knocked around and everything is incomplete. Okay. But if you go back and you look at that play, all Green Bay needed, we're talking about a tie game. It was 10-10. We still had, again, I bring up the clock because it was still 4 minutes. Or at least it was like 3.5 minutes. Somewhere around that range to go. So you had time. You didn't have to press the issue throwing a deep ball like that. You could have just maybe gone. I'm not saying you could just use your regular offense or whatever, but you don't have to be in that much of a hurry at that point. You just didn't have to be. But he goes for that play. Obviously, clock stops. Green Bay has to punt. Basically, when that punt was off the foot of Green Bay's punter, and San Francisco's returner didn't fumble it, he didn't muff it, there wasn't a penalty that would give Green Bay the ball back, or there wasn't a penalty that would back up San Francisco back toward the goal line or anything like that. When all those scenarios went San Francisco's way, the game was over. The game was over. Once there was no fumble, there was no muff of the punt, you knew, you had to have known that San Francisco was going to come down and score the points to win that football game. That's just kind of the way this thing plays out. I mean, you know, almost every time, man. Almost every time. But on that play, if he sits there on the incomplete pass to Davante Adams, if he looks down underneath, he has Alan Lazard wide open going across the middle of the field. Wide open. And if he gets the ball to Alan Lazard, his receiver, if he gets the ball to him, he's going to run a little while as well. If you sit there and you go back and you look at that film, he's going to run toward that right sideline, and he's going to run more than likely all the way into field goal range. That's how open he was underneath. And Aaron Rodgers decided to take the long pass. And if this was not necessary. And then you go back and you really look at you look at this, man. You look at the stats. You look at the box score. Obviously, again, you know, Davante Adams is one of, if not the best receiver in the NFL. There's no question about that. He had 11 targets. Had 9 receptions. Their running back, Aaron Jones, had 10 targets, 9 receptions, 129 yards, by the way. So you look at, first of all, you look at those two numbers, you figure out how the Green Bay only scored 10 points. That's 219 yards right there. Well, I'm going to tell you how probably it happened. The remaining, there are 5 other receivers and tight ends. Randall Cobb, Mercedes Lewis, Alan Lazard. They combined, those 5 receivers combined for 6 targets. 6 targets between 5 players. So, I looked at that and I was just like, this can't be correct, but obviously it is. And then you sit there and you look back at that third down play before Green Bay punted the ball to the 49ers. Alan Lazard, I mean, there's no way Aaron Rodgers shouldn't have seen him streaking across the middle of the field. There's just no way. And like I said, he would have ran another 20 yards, which would have gotten them into field goal range. So, for, you know, Green Bay would have had the ball right there where they needed to have it, in position to win the football game. But Aaron Rodgers decided to take the deep shot to his, to the guy he's more comfortable with, I'm sure. Don't get me wrong about that. I understand all of that. But it was the wrong play to make. And for that to be the last pass possibly for him at Lambeau Field is just, man, it's kind of crazy. So that was an incredible ending to that football game. Again, Green Bay should never have lost that game, in my opinion. But they did. And then you go back and you look at the first game of Saturday. Ryan Tannehill, man. And we talked about it. We talked about it here on the show last week. The only thing Ryan Tannehill has to do is not screw it up. Just not screw it up, man. You got Derrick Henry coming back. You have a defense that I think that I thought would get good pressure on Joe Burrow. I didn't think they'd get that much pressure on Joe Burrow. 9 sacks. They sacked Joe Burrow 9 sacks, and they hurried him a lot more times than that. But the Tennessee Titans, because of 3 huge interceptions by Ryan Tannehill, lose the football game. And again, that was just the key, man. I mean, like, you don't want to sit here. It's obviously a team loss. Obviously, there have been other things that the Titans could have done to win that football game. Don't get me wrong. But when it comes down to it, man, it's hard to sit there and just not look at Ryan Tannehill. And again, we talked, we talked about it last week. Just do not, don't turn the ball over. In the 3 games prior to that, he did not turn the ball over. But in those games, and there in the, toward the middle of the season, especially right after Derrick Henry went down with injury, he became a turnover machine. And we saw that again this past Saturday afternoon. And like I said in the intro, no matter how you want to try to do it, maybe I don't think there's any way you can do it. Spell Tannehill, you're going to have to put an I, an N, and a T in his name. There's no other way you're going to be able to spell it. You're not going to be able to spell it without those 3 letters. And the Titans found that out the hard way this past Saturday. The good news was Derrick Henry did make his comeback. It's just unfortunate, man, that it came to that. You know, came down in a loss to the Cincinnati Bengals like that. But it was great to see him back. He played pretty well. He did get a touchdown. Obviously not, probably not back where you're 100% where where he probably was going to dominate the game. I didn't expect anything like that. I didn't expect him to have a 100-yard game or anything. But I thought he did pretty well in what he was able to do. And now he's into the offseason, man. And Titans have a lot to think about. They've got a lot to think about. Ryan Tannehill is obviously going to be back. He has a pretty big contract. I don't see anybody making a move for him or anything like that. So he's going to be back in Nashville. But, I don't know if maybe it's time to start thinking about drafting a quarterback. I don't know if that quarterback is out there this season. Quarterback pickings are pretty slim when you look at the draft this season, in my opinion. But, again, I think that, you've got to start thinking about it if you're a Titans fan, if you're the Titans organization. You've got to start thinking about the future of this franchise because, again, you're seeing it right now, man. You've got to have that quarterback. Joe Burrow, despite the fact of being sacked 9 times, you look at what he did, though. He had a really good game other than that. He made plays to Jamar Chase. He made enough of them. And, again, he's going to get a chance to, on a huge stage on Sunday afternoon to really solidify his spot as maybe one of the better quarterbacks in this league when he goes up against Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. That is going to be a really offensive explosion, I think, in that game. As we get closer to Sunday, man, I'm looking forward to seeing that one. Unfortunately, I would rather have seen the Kansas City Chiefs coming into Nissan Field in Nashville, though. That's what I would rather have seen. But it is what it is, man. We'll have to see how that thing goes. And, of course, in the other NFC game, in the other championship game, the NFC matchup, that is going to be the Rams hosting the San Francisco 49ers. And that is going to be the third meeting between those two teams this season. Obviously, they're huge division rivals. So we're going to get into those games. I'll give you my pick, my prediction on both of those games a little bit later in the show. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to get into some college hoops as we go around the SEC, man. Like I said, the number one ranked Auburn Tigers. They and many other SEC basketball teams get ready for the SEC Big 12 Challenge. We'll talk about it when we get back. Ball About the South continues. All right, y'all, we're back. Ball About the South. This is episode 19. We continue, whatever the case is, we continue here on this Friday as I record. If we get ready for, like I said, we just kind of talked about some of the NFL. Again, I'll get into my predictions and kind of a little bit of a preview for Sunday, the upcoming Sunday games. I'll give you a few of my thoughts on both of those games coming up a little bit later. But right now, man, we're going to get into some college hoops. And, again, we talked about Auburn here at the top of the show, the Auburn Tigers, which, you know, I thought they should have been ranked number one a couple of weeks ago. They kind of gave it back to Gonzaga after Baylor lost those couple of games. And, it is what it is. I mean, it's not really that big a deal. It doesn't really matter about, you know, if you're ranked number one or two at that point. If you're ranked number one, two, three, or four, you're doing pretty good. So it's not a huge deal, and definitely, I mean, it's not like I'm an Auburn fan or anything like that, but, you know, just kind of recognizing how really good basketball team that they really are, basically what I was kind of going with. But, it is what it is. But if we get ready for a huge Saturday of basketball here around the SEC, this is my segment. We talk a lot of SEC sports and everything. The SEC Big 12 Challenge takes place on Saturday, man. It's going to be, I think it could be really an incredible day of basketball. There are a lot of huge matchups. Auburn kind of, maybe one of the bigger matchups when they host Oklahoma. That should be an interesting game. Oklahoma is unranked, but they have some good wins, and I think they're going to be, they're 13-7 overall on the season. So that's going to be a pretty good basketball game. I think Oklahoma, I saw them play Kansas a couple weeks ago, and the Oklahoma team can play. So it's not going to be an easy matchup, even though that game is going to be in Auburn. The entire challenge starts off at 11 o'clock Central Time, 12 noon Eastern, when LSU travels to play TCU. That's the very first game out of the gates. And then that second game is Oklahoma and Auburn. The third game. Well, maybe the fourth game, because you got first game is LSU traveling to TCU. You got Oklahoma going to Auburn. Auburn, by the way, a 9.5-point favorite in that basketball game. Then you have Missouri traveling for, you know, they're used to being in the Big 12. They travel to Iowa State. The Iowa State Cyclones are ranked 23rd in the country. That game goes down at the same time as the Auburn game. And then after that, at 3 o'clock, the Alabama Crimson Tide hosts the Baylor Bears. And I want to talk about Alabama really quick. Before we get into the rest of the schedule, if they continue to struggle big time, and, you know, now you sit there and you look up the number four ranked team, the defending national champion, the Baylor Bears, come to Tuscaloosa with what is a huge game for Alabama. I mean, it's a big game, obviously, for Baylor, I guess, to an extent. But, I mean, Baylor's Alabama still has a really high net ranking and all of that, even though they're not ranked in the AP or the coaches poll or anything. If Baylor comes in and loses this game, it's not going to be that, it should not hurt them that much. Okay, if they, you know, if they try to stay in the hunt for a number one seed and all of that coming up in March Madness, that should not, a loss at Alabama should not hurt them that much. So I don't think Baylor really comes in with a lot of pressure. I think obviously they want to win the game. All the pressure is going to be on Alabama in this basketball game. Alabama needs this game, man. I mean, excuse me. Alabama still has the Gonzaga and the Houston wins to hang their hat on from December, but that was in December. We're now getting close to February, and this team still looks a hot mess right now. And this would go a long way of curing some of those ills. But when you sit there and you go back at this past Tuesday night and that loss to Georgia, Georgia had not won a game in conference until Tuesday night when they beat Alabama. That game went down 82-76. The Bulldogs win that game. That game was played in Athens. Alabama turned the ball over 19 times. And, you know, basically, there's no other stat that you really even need to know about. It just really isn't. That was the difference in that game. And then, you know, of course, one other, I guess, your stat. It's not a team stat. But the other huge stat in that game was Devon Quinterly, the point guard for Alabama, scored 5 points. He is averaging 15 points per game. He has not been, he has been an absolute shell of himself pretty much all season long, at least from the performances that we saw from him last season. He's shown flashes. He's had some good games, don't get me wrong. But it's been a huge struggle for him. And in the last 4 or 5 minutes of that game, Tuesday night against Georgia, he was on the bench. So there in crunch time, Nate Oates had Javon Quinterly on the bench. And when you sit there and you look at it, you know, from that standpoint, man, Javon Quinterly is a guy that played at Villanova for one season, his freshman season. He was highly, highly recruited. He was a five-star coming out of high school. And Alabama, you know, Nate Oates comes to Alabama from Buffalo. He gets him, you know, signed on the dotted line to come to Tuscaloosa. Well, he had something going on with the NCAA, so he had to sit out. He sat out his first season in Tuscaloosa, and then, of course, he played last year. And really played well. But for whatever reason, he has taken a huge drop in scoring. Well, maybe not a huge drop in scoring, a drop in scoring. This is overall game just does not look the same. So it's just really been a big disappointment, and that has been kind of the disappointment in Javon Quinterly is kind of equal to the disappointment in this basketball team. And you sit there and you look at where they were this time last season. I mean, this is a team that is right now 4-4 in the league. Alabama lost 2 conference games last season. They lost 2 games. They went 15-2, and then, of course, they won their 3 games in the SEC tournament. They've already lost 4 games in the conference this time around. And the thing is, man, you're sitting there 4-4. They're 13-7 overall. Again, with that record and the wins that they were able to accumulate in December, this was still an NCAA tournament team. However, their seeding line is probably dropping. I mean, I don't know where they would be seated right now, but probably I'm thinking maybe around this, if people, you know, some of the people that do bracketology, I have not really checked that out too tight here the last couple weeks or whatever, but I would imagine Alabama's probably lingering around a 7 or 8 seed right now. And, you know, which is just not right for this basketball team. This team should be more talented than that. I am getting around to the believing that this team is not as talented as they were last season. And I think probably one of the biggest things they're missing is that interior presence that they had with guys like Jordan Bruner, who has moved on, Alex Reese. And maybe not just that they had interior presence, not that they were, it's not the fact that they were just bigs. I think it's the fact that both those guys could stretch the floor. Both those guys could get out, shoot 15, 20 footers. They can go, they had range out to 3-point range. You know, Alex Reese, one of the big shots last season in the tournament was his three that tied the game against UCLA to send it to overtime. I mean, you know, he was about 6'9", really, you know, turned into a really good shooter. And I think what's going on with this Alabama team, man, is more offensive than it is defense. And the thing is, you sit there and you look at what Nate Oates says after every game, y'all. He's talking about effort. And I get what he's saying. Obviously, Alabama fans looking at the same thing. They're calling for better effort. Teams not showing effort defensively. They're not rebounding. A lot of basically defense and rebounding is a lot effort. I mean, effort is 80-90% of doing both of those things. I mean, you have to, you know, the effort is the biggest thing that you need when you're talking about trying to get a rebound. It's about effort. It's about beating your guy to the ball. It's about blocking that guy out and things of that nature. And Alabama, you know, those players are not doing that. But for me, I think probably Alabama's woes on the offensive end is kind of leading to that. I think it's leading to these players kind of, I think the bad shooting, the lack of, you know, the lack of cohesiveness offensively, the lack of flow in the offense, I think it's kind of getting into these guys' heads. That's just my observation. I could be totally off about that. I could be totally wrong. But that's just kind of what I see, man. And so I just think when you sit there and you think about last year's team, you had guys like Jordan Bruner that could stretch the floor. You had Alex Reese that could stretch the floor. Those guys are not there anymore, and the guys that they have replacing them are not doing that. I think teams are able to pack their defenses in a little bit more. They're taking away the drives of Javon Quinterly to a certain extent anyway, and Jaden Shackelford. They're not getting to the rim as easily as they did last season. And these teams are willing to let Alabama shoot a lot of bricks from three-point range. Now, when Alabama can get hot shooting the ball, they'd probably be all right with that type of offense. But, you know, this is no flow to the offense, man. And the spacing, what Nate Oates is trying to do with that basketball team, it needs spacing. And they don't have that right now. And I think that is hurting them on the defensive end as well. So we'll see if they can get this thing straight. They're going to have to get it straight in a hurry, because even after this Baylor game, you look up, they've got to go to Auburn for their midweek game this week, and then they host the Kentucky Wildcats next week. Kentucky has the big game of the day in this SEC Big 12 Challenge. They take their show to the Fog. Fog Allen Fieldhouse to play Kansas, and I'm going to tell you what, man. That big Monday game between Kansas and Texas Tech this past week was on fire. Both those teams are high-level basketball teams. That was an amazing game. Went two overtimes. Kansas ended up winning the basketball game. But, I mean, you know, Texas Tech, man, they kept coming back time after time against Kansas in that game. But this dude for Kansas, I guess you say it, Ochai Agbaji, I think that's his name. I mean, I'm pretty sure Agbaji, is that's how you pronounce his last name. This dude's averaging 21 points a game. He came through for the Jayhawks big time. He had 37 points in that game. And I think, you know, I have taken a lot of shots at Kansas and Bill Self over the years here in the NCAA tournament when, you know, Kansas taking all these early exits and everything. But this Kansas team just might be different with that dude leading the way. I think Kansas could be a player and possibly challenge for a national championship this year. It's possible. We're gonna keep an eye on them. But that, like I said, that was a high level game this past Monday night. So that's gonna be an interesting game with Kentucky going into Kansas. Unfortunately, Ty Washington, their freshman guard, not sure about his status. He has been out since being injured in that game against Auburn last week, which Kentucky lost. And that was the game that propelled Auburn into the number one ranking. Ty Washington, I think he's a really important player for Kentucky. They need to get him back. If they get him back, the goal with everything else that they have, Kentucky is also a player in the national championship race. I don't think there's any question about that. So anyway, so we get back again. To me, that is the big game of the day on Saturday when this SEC Big 12 challenge is when Kentucky Wildcats go in to play Kansas. That should be an interesting game, to say the least. Some of the other games. As we kind of close this thing out, man, Tennessee goes to Texas. That should be interesting. Mississippi State, they go to Texas Tech. That should be an interesting game. Mississippi State nearly beat Kentucky this past Wednesday night. That was a really good basketball game from Rupp Arena. We'll see what the Bulldogs can do against a really good Texas Tech team. So that is kind of the rundown of what I think should be an exciting SEC basketball challenge with the Big 12. Again, I'm going to get into, like I said before, kind of intro the show and everything. I want to get into talking about a couple teams here from the South that I think can do some damage in March Madness. And that game, the first team we're going to talk about is UAB Blazers. They, of course, reside in Conference USA. Unfortunately, Conference USA has been a one-bid league for the most part for a long time, but This is one big league that has won several games here in the last few years. UAB won one of those games against Iowa State. UAB was a 14 seed. I think that was 2015, if I remember correctly. And Alabama, UAB was able to win that game against Iowa State, the 3 seed. We've seen North Texas do damage. We've seen Middle Tennessee State get to a Sweet 16. Since that game, since that UAB run in 2015, we've seen, like I said, North Texas, they won a couple games in the tournament since then. Conference USA has had success. In my opinion, this should be a multi-bid league this year. Because you look at the top three teams in the west side of Conference USA, you look at UAB leading the league, all three teams tied at 7-1. And then you have North Texas at 7-1. And then you have Louisiana Tech. Now, Louisiana Tech's only loss was to UAB last Saturday at home as they hosted UAB. This is a UAB team, man. I'm not a big time, you know. I'm not a scout or anything. I don't know, you know, everything that these scouts look at or whatever when they evaluate players. But when I look at this guy, Jordan Walker, he is the point guard for the UAB Blazers. When I look at this dude, he looks like an NBA player to me. But I'm not really seeing a lot of love for him as far as, you know, talking about being drafted or anything like that. And I'm not saying that, you know, it's not out there. It could be. But this dude, now I want you to look him up. If you've never heard of him, you've never seen him play, you need to look this dude up. His name is Jordan Walker, but they call him Jelly. Jelly Walker. He's a transfer out of Tulane, by the way. He transferred into UAB, and Andy Kennedy is really making a living off of these transfers. They have been huge for him this season. The Blazers are 17-4. Their net ranking is in the 30s, which is really good, which could possibly get them an at-large bid. But the only thing is about it, they probably cannot lose but maybe one more game, and that would probably have to be in the conference tournament. To talk about getting an at-large bid, that is the downside with being in a conference like this. But this team is really good. I mean, they have good interior play. Look at guy Trey Jemison, number 55. He is a transfer in from Clemson. Now, he came from Clemson as a transfer, but he's actually from Birmingham. You look at a guy like K.J. Buffin, who was a transfer from Ole Miss. He came along with Andy Kennedy, I guess you could say. this team is loaded. They have a lot of really good players. They have four guards that they play. You know, that's something I can't really say about Alabama. And for me right now, UAB is the second best team in the state behind Auburn. I think that's how good this team is. And I think with the right matchup, they can do some damage in March when you sit there and you look at it. This guy, Jordan Walker, he's averaging around 20 points a game. He had a 31-point game against Louisiana Tech just last week. He had 20 points, including the game winner against Western Kentucky this in their midweek game, I think that Thursday night when UAB won that game at the buzzer to go 7-1 in the league. And he is one of those guys, I think, that, you know, we've seen in the tournament before. We've seen guys like Steph Curry. Obviously, I'm not trying to put this guy in that kind of category. I'm not saying he's good as Steph Curry or anything. But we've seen guys like that have a huge tournament. And if this guy can get in the NCAA tournament, man, I think a lot of people are going to have their eyes really open to this dude. And I think he is a really, really good basketball player. So yeah, for me, my team that I want to spotlight today is the UAB Blazers. And for good reason. If they're able to make the tournament, man, this team is definitely one that can make some noise. Anyway, we're going to close out the show. Before I do, go just a little bit more news about the SEC. The Georgia Bulldog fans are pretty mad and they're pretty upset that Jermaine Burton, their big time wide receiver, their second leading receiver on the season, he decided to hit the transfer portal, and he is coming to the University of Alabama. Man, the backlash from that has been crazy. They have talked about this kid. They're calling him a traitor and all this stuff, man. This dude's just trying to do what's best for him. And I don't know, man. Anyway, I thought that was a huge get for Alabama because they obviously losing a couple of their receivers in Jameson Williams, Slade Bolden, John Metchie. So getting a guy like that to add to who the guys that they already have was pretty huge, and Georgia fans are very upset about it. So that is a noteworthy thing that also went on this past week around the SEC. Anyway, let's get into my picks for the NFL, man. These two conference championship games. The first one goes down, the LA Rams hosting the San Francisco 49ers. Normally, I would probably go with the 49ers in this football game. I'm just going to be real with you. When you sit there and you look at, you know, basically what we saw in the second half of that game just this past weekend, the Rams nearly giving it away. That's all the reason you need to sit there and favor the 49ers. And you think about how they gave away a 17-point lead in Week 18 to the same 49er football team. Same team, same place. That's really all you really need to look at to sit there and say, you know what, I think the 49ers can win this football game. But I'm not going to go that route, especially because of the fact I picked the Rams before the season to be in the Super Bowl. I picked them to face the Kansas City Chiefs, and I'm going to stick with that. I'm going to stick with my guns, and I'm going to go with the Rams. But I would not be at all surprised if the 49ers pulled that thing out. I'm going to go with the Rams winning the game 27-24. And in the other game, Kansas City Chiefs hosting the Cincinnati Bengals. I think we're going to see an offensive shootout in this football game. But I just cannot see Cincinnati finishing this thing off. Normally, we've seen teams like this. We saw it a couple seasons ago, the Titans kind of come out of nowhere and make the AFC Championship game with some unlikely victories on the road and everything. We saw that now with Cincinnati doing what they did this past Saturday. And I think this the same thing that happened to that Tennessee team a couple seasons ago is going to happen to Cincinnati this coming Sunday. I think they'll play well. But in the end, I think Mahomes and the Chiefs will be a little bit too much. So I've got the Chiefs winning that game 34-27. All right, y'all, that's going to do it for this show. That's all I got for y'all this week. probably one of the shortest shows I've ever done. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Again, my name is Kerry Wood. C Wood for short, at C Wood on Sports on Twitter and IG is where you can find me. Give me a follow there. Please like, subscribe, comment to the show. All those good things, wherever you're listening to it, Apple, Google, Spotify, doesn't matter where or how you listen to Ball About the South. I just appreciate you doing just that. Anyway, until next week, man, y'all be chill, be safe out there. I'll holler at you next week when Ball About the South continues.